Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What do Texans know about barbecue that others only wish they knew? And where do the connoisseurs go to find the best plates in the state? Visitors from all over the world come to Texas to experience authentic barbecue. But those who enjoy just a meal or two can't possibly understand the many fascinating variations this time-honored food tradition the way my guest today does. Daniel Vaughn's love of barbecue has taken him to hundreds of restaurants, roadside stands, even gas stations in every corner of the state, where he has sampled the best, the worst, and everything in between. He was recently named the first ever barbecue editor for Texas Monthly Magazine, and he's got a much-anticipated new book out called The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. Daniel, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me here.
So let's start with this. What is the definition? What counts as barbecue?
Well, it's basically meat that has been smoked or cooked over wood. Think what you're doing in your gas grill, burgers, hot dogs, that doesn't really count as barbecue. Even steaks, not barbecue. The beauty of barbecue and the thing that I love about it is taking these large pieces of meat that are otherwise, not even considered edible if cooked over a high heat, and doing them over a long and low and slow cooking process to make them, well, incredible.
I love this thing that you said, that really great barbecue is not so much about the ingredients as about technique.
Yeah, that's right. The best barbecue I've eaten across the state has been simply seasoned with salt and pepper. The kind of secret rub recipes of, 13 special seasonings and herbs. It just, none of that is really necessary to get good barbecue. And a lot of people feel like if they get the secret, that sort of secret from a pit master, that they're somehow going to be able to duplicate it. And the only real secret ingredient is the pit master themselves and the skill and experience that they have. And that's just not something that you're going to get the first time you put a brisket on the smoker in the backyard.
How often do you find, there are, of course, new places that pop up, but how often do you find that these really are techniques that get passed down through generations of individual families?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at Bobby Miller of Louis Miller Barbecue. Mm-hmm. So Louis Miller is in Taylor, Texas. Louis Miller's son is Bobby. Bobby passed away in 2008. And his son Wayne runs Louis Miller Barbecue. His son John runs John Miller Meat Company in Austin. His daughter Leanne owns La Barbecue in Austin. And Lance Kirkpatrick of Style Switch Barbecue in Austin trained under Bobby. That's pretty amazing. And Aaron Franklin of Franklin Barbecue, maybe the most popular place in the country, really, for barbecue, worked briefly for John Miller. So all of those people really come off of that single branch off that tree. And all of that has to do with family and with all those recipes passing down. You can really see the similarities in each one of these places from the original style of barbecue that Bobby was doing.
All right, so let's talk about barbecue styles. There are four distinct ones in Texas, starting with East Texas style barbecue, which is like what people maybe elsewhere in the country think of instantly when they think of barbecue.
Yeah, that's right. The fall off the bone ribs, if you will. A lot of sauce being an important component. Chopped beef sandwiches, hot links, all those things that you might normally find in the Deep South have kind of made their way just across that eastern border. That's the eastern style of barbecue.
It's funny because fall off the bone meat, chopped beef sandwiches, and sauce are all things that don't come across really well in your writing.
Well, a chopped beef sandwich is one of those things that it's hard to screw up. If you get a nice buttered bun and you chop up the meat finely enough and add a good sauce to it, it's
edible.
It's a pretty terrible thing if you make that taste bad. Uh-huh. Saucy, fall off the bone ribs. Yeah. To me, Central Texas style is really the best style of Texas barbecue, or my favorite style. And that is a style where the ribs themselves, they don't fall off the bone. You can bite through them. You can, the ribs give you already one of nature's greatest natural handles. Mm-hmm. So doing away with that and picking up a rib off of the plate and having all the meat fall on right onto the plate is a sad thing to see.
And Central Texas-style barbecue has its roots like in Czech and German cuisine.
Yeah, that's right. you know, Texas barbecue, obviously we're known for our smoked beef, our smoked brisket and beef short ribs. But one of the things that's really unique to Texas is that sausage is also considered part of our barbecue cuisine. You don't really find sausages elsewhere in, you know, Memphis or Kansas City or the Carolinas for sure. And the Germans and Czechs and the Poles brought over those sausage-making traditions, and you can still find specific places that make Czech-style sausage, Polish-style sausage, and German-style sausage as well.
And these are places where, to avoid offending the pitmaster, you don't ask for sauce.
Right. And if you're going to pour sauce all over the meat, just do it once you're out of sight. You know, I know that a lot of people who come to visit Texas from other states feel like barbecue is synonymous with barbecue sauce, that the two must go together. But in the Central Texas style especially, even if it's a good sauce, it's better just to dip your bread in it. If the meat is good enough, there's just no need to add that other flavor to compete with the already excellent meat.
So Hill Country Barbecue actually is cooked more over direct heat as opposed to smoked for a long period of time.
Yeah, that's right. Whereas in Central Texas, you have indirect smoke that's going to be cooked over, you know, maybe 18 hours at a place like Franklin Barbecue. If you go to the Hill Country, they're going to actually burn the wood down in a barrel that's out back, collect those coals with a very long-handled shovel, take those very hot coals to a pit, and place it directly under the meat. So where a brisket that might go for 18 hours in Central Texas in an indirect heat pit, in the direct heat pits of the Hill Country, they might be done in 5 or 6 hours.
So a lot of people, when they're approaching a barbecue place, if they've been to many, that there's like a distinct smell right in the air. Can you tell, you know, from 100 yards away if you're about to enter a place that's going to be good or bad?
You know, if you get out of the car and you don't smell smoke at all, it's a bad sign, really bad sign. Even if the smoking was done hours and hours ago, that smoke tends to linger, as I know from the smell on my clothes when I get home. And not only that, but even the smell in the air, you can get a sense of whether they're doing indirect heat style or they're doing direct heat. One of my prouder moments in here, my photographer, Nick McWhorter, was with me on all these trips. And when we started these trips, he was a barbecue newbie. He didn't really know anything about barbecue other than that he liked brisket. And it was maybe our fourth or fifth trip, and we stepped out of our car in Midland. And he sniffed around and said, "Smells like direct heat mesquite."
You're in the club, buddy.
You're right. Wow, this is amazing. So it took me, you know, several years to identify that, and in just a few months, you've already picked it up. So those differences can be picked up pretty easily, and you know, that lingering smoky smell is what you're looking for.
I'm so glad that you did not neglect barbacoa, because sometimes that tradition is sort of thought of as Mexican cooking or as something that is not native to Texas, but in fact it is.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the other reason I really wanted to celebrate it is there's this place, Vera's in Brownsville. It's really the only place left that I could find, and probably the only place left in Texas and maybe the country that still does it the old way, which is you take a whole cow head. It's not seasoned at all. You put it in a pit in the ground with only wood coals. You cover over that pit, cover the lid, that metal lid, with dirt, and then you cook it overnight. That's the traditional way to do it in Mexico, the traditional way that they're going to do it in the backyards of South Texas, even in West Dallas. I went to a family barbacoa party with the Coronado family, and that's the way they did it. But commercially, you're almost never going to find it done that way. That's why Vera's is so special. And the flavor of the meat is just so much different. It's a drier texture, and not dry in a bad way. And there's just the fat is so much more melted into the meat. The normal way to do it for most any place that you see barbacoa written out front, they're going to be steaming the meat, steaming it or braising it in the oven. Many times they're just going to be using cheek meat, which takes up a whole lot less room than an entire skull.
Yeah.
So it was really a special thing to find Vera's, and really a sad thing that in all the searching that I did, I couldn't find another place that still did it that way.
So when we go to a barbecue place, you recommend that we look for a spot, unless we've had a recommendation, where you can like pick your cut of meat at a window, cafeteria style, rather than sitting down at a table and having a plate brought to us. Why is that?
Well, there's a lot of power that comes with that, and a lot of knowledge you can gain before you even get the meat. You know, if you if you go into a place with white tablecloths and you sit down and the server comes, you know, you give your order.
White tablecloths, by the way, is probably like a dead giveaway.
Yeah,
you're not going to have a
yeah.
good experience.
But you give your order to the server, and then it's all just kind of – it goes back in the kitchen, and you just get what you get.
Yeah.
As my four-year-old says, you get what you get, and you don't throw a fit. Like, because there's really – what can you do? You know, they serve you what they're normally going to serve you. They don't really have any idea what your likes and dislikes are. But if you're up in the front counter and you see that meat being cut in front of you, well, the first thing, once they unwrap that brisket and it kind of bounces on the counter, you get an idea of how well done it is. If
mm-hmm.
if it's done, or if it's still, you know, kind of bouncing around there and has several hours left that it should still be in the smoker. You also see how they treat that brisket. You know, do they immediately take the back of their knife and slide the entire fat cap off and throw it away? That's, you know, that's a crime in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Getting rid of all that good fat. And then, you know, you can, as you see them slicing it, are they going to take that end of the brisket and scoot it to the side, maybe to be thrown away or turned into chopped beef? And if so, I can immediately point to that. No, put that on my tray. I want that. The same thing for those kind of gnarly end ribs that don't look so pretty on a plate. Those can sometimes have the best flavor because of the intense smokiness that's on those, that all that surface area at that end rib. So there's just a lot of power that you have there. And also there's a back and forth too. It's not just you giving out orders. You know, that guy or girl who's back there cutting, they know their barbecue too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to immediately respond if you're like, no, I want that good fatty edge. They're going to be like, all right, yeah, this guy knows this guy knows good barbecue. So now I'm going to reciprocate that. I'll save all this other kind of lean stuff for people who are coming in here on their Weight Watchers program. So
no carbs, but plenty of delicious barbecue. So you admit right off the top in the book that you are not a native Texan. Where are you born?
I'm from Ohio. It was actually through the editing process. We were nearly finished with the book. I'd gone back and forth with the editor a few times, my great editor, Libby Edelson for Echo. And, I added a line in there, added that first line in there almost near the end. And I said, I want you to take a look at this, see what you think. She's like, that's perfect. I make no pretense. I am not a native Texan. And I want people to know that right away. I'm not trying to come in here and fool anybody that I was born and bred in Texas. But I also think that is helpful in some ways. I don't have that sacred cow. I don't have that place that my granddad or my dad took me to that I have to say that I love. Otherwise, I would offend my family. I don't have that place. I came here with kind of a fresh eye and a real craving to just go out and discover things.
How did your relationship to barbecue take hold?
Well, it really started like the first week that I moved here. I moved here in 2001, and I went to Peggy Sue Barbecue here in Dallas and got my first piece of smoked brisket. And it was I wanted more. You know, it was just one of those flavors that in Ohio we had brisket, but it was always corned and served with cabbage. So
mm-hmm.
this smoked brisket was a completely new thing. And then I took it to another level a few years later. On a big road trip, my friend Sam Watkins and I put together a crazy itinerary of 16 barbecue joints over 3 days. We used the Texas Monthly Top 50 as our guide, and you know, we were just going to go down to Central Texas and see what all the fuss was about all these places, and were these places in Central Texas really that much better than the barbecue we'd been eating in Dallas? So that was really a life-changing weekend, really, and it forever changed the way I looked at barbecue.
Daniel Vaughn is with us. He's the first ever barbecue editor for Texas Monthly Magazine and author of the new book, The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. He'll be signing copies of his book at a barbecue at the Four Corners Brewery in West Dallas on Saturday. You can find information about that on the Think page. If you want to join us, call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering summer courses for adults in literature and languages, cultural history, and arts and design at the Dallas, Plano, and Taos, New Mexico campuses. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Daniel Vaughn. He is the first ever, if it's possible, barbecue editor for Texas Monthly Magazine and author of the new book, The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. If you'd like to join our conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. So you mentioned that a few years ago you had this life-changing trip and you based your itinerary on Texas Monthly's top 50 picks for barbecue. Now this is your job, right?
That's right. Yeah.
How did this come about? Did you convince them you guys need a barbecue editor? How did that work?
I'd been working with Texas Monthly for a while. Jake Silverstein had the forethought that it might be a good idea to rope me in even before I wrote the book. He knew I was going to be writing this book, knew that I was going to be out traveling all over Texas, mm-hmm. and thought, what a better way to use this than as a scouting mission for the upcoming Texas Monthly Top 50. But it's funny that about a year and a half before that conversation started, I sent just a one-off email to Pat Sharp, the food editor who'd been really the one who oversaw these lists in the past, and just said, you know, we've got 3 years till this list comes out. We need to get started. And she laughed and said, well, we don't really use freelancers for this, for the tasting team, really, but I'll see what I can do. And I didn't really have much hope for it. But, you know, then last November we started in earnest on the tasting tour. And it was about that time as well that I called Jake Silverstein and I just said, you know, I was a practicing architect at that point. And I said, if you've ever wondered if I would quit my job as an architect to pursue a job as, writing for Texas Monthly full-time, probably writing about barbecue, then I'm game for that. I just want to throw that out there. I don't know if you have any need for that position, for a full-time position, but he took the bait, and here I am with the best business card in the world.
So how does one convince his wife that it's a good idea to travel all around the state for weeks on end eating barbecue with a buddy?
Yeah. Well, it started once there was actual money attached to it, so that certainly helped. She'd actually been struggling along for years without any money attached to it other than a meager advertising that I was getting on my website, mm-hmm. And then coupled with the fact that she doesn't like barbecue at all.
She doesn't really?
No, she doesn't. She plays along sometimes, and she'll go with me and get a smoked turkey sandwich or something. But as far as brisket and ribs, she would rather eat pretty much anything else.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about specifics. I know people are going to want to ask you questions as well. And we do have a line open now at 800-933-5372. You mentioned earlier the sort of picking and choosing of your cuts of meat. And you have a great description in the book of the smoke ring and the crust that forms, which you know, newbies might think, well, that's all burned or it's different colors. There's something wrong with it. Can you talk? I'm sure this is like anathema to many people listening, but for people who are uninitiated, talk about those qualities.
Well, a good crust is certainly something you want on your brisket. And that crust is probably going to be black if it's done well. And it's not burnt. That's just it's picked up a lot of the particles that the smoke is leaving on it as the smoke passes over the meat. Then just beneath that, you have a good smoke ring. So that's a pink or red ring that's just beneath the crust. And that it's not like a physical manifestation of smoke, but it does show you that the meat itself has been under the optimal temperature for a long enough period of time for that phenomenon to occur. And then beneath that, you want, well, just nice, good, juicy meat. And all of those really come together with, you know, that crust, you know, with it, when it's black, people, like I said, tend to think that maybe it's burnt. But if you think about how little of that crust you actually get with each slice, mm-hmm. that kind of surface area to meat ratio, you're really just getting a thin piece of crust around each one of those slices.
You're totally making me hungry right now. Maybe people have just finished lunch. Talk about this, the presence of fat, and you mentioned this earlier. I guess it's a preference thing, but you would always rather have some than have it sliced away ahead of time.
Yeah, well, for a couple of reasons, and I'll start with the more kind of geeky scientific reason. You know, you have water soluble flavors and you have fat soluble flavors, and you know, the water soluble flavors are always going to work well in direct contact with the meat. The meat's going to be 70% water, give or take a few, before it starts cooking. But first of all, you have the particles within smoke that are really fat-soluble flavors, and you have one of the most common rub ingredients in Texas anyway is black pepper. And the flavors from black pepper, those are, again, are fat-soluble flavors. So if you cut off the fat, then you're cutting off all of that, those flavors that have been soaked up from the smoke and from that black pepper, and all you're leaving is really a salty taste. The other reason is fat tastes good. A nice line, nice quarter-inch line of fat over top of a slice of moist or even the lean brisket, that nice layer of fat, it provides a good textural difference as well as all those good flavors that we just talked about. So cutting the fat off to me is just a crime, especially given the fact that, you know, at most places the meat's not really sold by the pound anyway. If the meat's sold as a combo plate, you're not paying for the fat anyway. So just slice it off if you don't want it and allow the pitmaster to leave it on there for the rest of us.
Okay, I'm going to leave off like venison and ostrich and wild boar. But there is also this great debate, like beef or pork?
Well, in Texas, we do it all, but of course, we celebrate the beef more often. It really goes back to, especially in Central Texas, back to the meat market days when, you know, that middle third of the steer always sells pretty easily straight from the meat counter. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got your ribeyes, you got your tenderloin, porterhouses, strips, all
sort of
that.
Sort of the prime cuts.
Yeah. Right. You got all those prime cuts. And what was generally left over was the forequarter was one of them. It's full of a lot of tough meat. That's where you get your chuck short ribs, the brisket, the beef plate ribs. So all of these really tough cuts of meat that were probably a little harder to sell straight off the meat counter. So one way to elongate their lifespan to help sell them was to smoke them. It's a natural preservation, natural way of preserving meat. So, you smoke them, you give them a little more shelf life. And then as that progressed and we got into kind of boxed meat, then it was really just the brisket that people were smoking or the short ribs as a specific single cut. And so that's one of the reasons those are really celebrated in Texas. And, you know, Texas is beef country as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at a brisket, it's this muscle. It's actually two muscles put together. And the two muscles themselves are incredibly hard to cook. It's probably the hardest meat to master. The pork shoulder, you can put a pork shoulder on a smoker. It's got so much intermuscular fat in there that it's As long as you leave it on there long enough, you're really not going to screw it up and take it off before it dries out. But a brisket is, well, it's a whole other animal, but it's just a whole other level of difficulty.
How important really is the wood itself and the flavor that it imparts when you're smoking meat?
Yeah, the wood itself, the most important thing being that you want hardwood. Mm-hmm. You don't want any of the resinous pine. Yeah. There are many different woods out there that are used in Texas. The main ones that are used are oak, specifically post oak in Central Texas, hickory, pecan, and then mesquite. Mm-hmm. And in researching the book, I actually found that mesquite over – if you look all across the state, mesquite is really the most common one that's used, where I think – just because of the places that are most celebrated use post oak, that I think people outside of Texas get an idea that oak is probably the primary wood. And, you know, between oak, hickory, and pecan, I know people argue this, but the flavor differences are pretty minute. But when you go over to mesquite, then you're talking about some really significant flavor differences. A lot heavier smoke, a lot harder wood to deal with overall. It tends to burn really hot. It also tends to have a lot more of a creosote flavor. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to temper the temperature of that fire itself, and you get it too low to where the wood's smoldering, you start creating particles that give you a creosote flavor. It kind of numbs your tongue. It tastes like an ashtray. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those that when you taste it, you know something has gone wrong, and that's easiest to do with mesquite.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jared in Louisville. Hey, Jared.
Hey there. How's it going?
Great. Thank you.
All right. I had a quick question for Daniel. As I said, I was born and was raised in Memphis, and so where brisket is almost non-existent. And so coming to Texas about 3 years ago, when all I could find was brisket, I almost became slightly contemptuous about it. And so I was wondering, for the Texas Monthly, I've been trying so hard to find other kinds of barbecue around the Metroplex. I was wondering if he had any plans, if he'd already written about different styles of barbecue and where some of the best places for that are.
So you're talking styles outside of Texas barbecue that is done
correct.
in the Metroplex.
Like the Memphis style or the Carolina, anything like that.
Yeah, well, Pecan Lodge down in the Farmer's Market, they're very well known for their brisket ribs and, of course, their beef short ribs too. But they do a mean pulled pork as well. It is a Texas-style pulled pork with a really heavy smoke on it, but they serve it with a sweetened vinegar sauce. Let's see, down in Arlington, there's a place called Virginia Barbecue. They say they've got Virginia-style barbecue as well as Georgia-style and Carolina-style. I can't say that I've really loved anything from there, but if you're looking for different styles, Peggy Sue Barbecue does a really good pulled pork sandwich with slaw if you want it, slaw and sauce, so that can give you those Carolina flavors. But as far as like a Memphis-style rib, unfortunately, I think like Red Hot and Blue is about the only option you've got if you want like a true rib that's been finished with that, with a dry rub.
A lot of barbecue places, of course, run out early in the day or at a certain point in the day. What does that say to you about the sort of integrity of the establishment?
Well, a barbecue joint has a certain amount of supply that they can provide, and that is governed solely by the size of the pits that they own. So if they fill those pits up to the max and they cook all that they can cook and they cook all that they can cook well, and then it's gone when it's gone. And that just tells me that, first off, they're not interested in just making money. Certainly it'd be better for the business if they could sell meat all day long. Mm-hmm. But they only want to sell what they can do well. Loving barbecue as its own style of food has some challenges that come with it, and that's one of them. I mean, you drive around the state, and a lot of places are closed on Sunday. A lot of places have odd hours. They might even be closed on a day that they say they're open. They might run out of meat early. They might run out of that one cut that you went there for early, and so you've got to settle for whatever's left. They might be cash only. They probably aren't going to serve beer. Just a lot of things that you have to deal with, but all of those things are a lot easier to deal with than going to a place and getting some ribs that have been rushed or some brisket that's not ready yet and having to suffer through that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Ron in Southlake. Hey, Ron.
Hey, good afternoon. I wanted to tell Daniel about an experience I had many years ago. I first fell in love with Texas barbecue at a restaurant in Robstown, Texas called Joe Cotton's.
Rest in peace.
Yes, indeed. Quite right. And that was in the mid-70s when I first traveled to this part of the country. 10 years later, I was living in Frankfurt, Germany. I went to a Texas-style bar in the middle of Frankfurt, and they did Texas line dancing, and everybody wore boots and 10-gallon hats. I was telling my host about Joe Cotton's when the fellow at the next table turned around and said to me in German, so I'll translate it for you, but basically I said, there's this great place I know just outside of Corpus in Robstown. And he looked at me and said, you must be talking about Joe Cotton. And I said, my God, Texas barbecue is well known if it's heard of in Frankfurt, Germany. But you might enjoy that.
Thanks for your call.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, word of good barbecue travels fast. I am always on Twitter, and I follow a lot of people, a lot of my peers who are out there looking for good barbecue. And when good barbecue is found, it spreads like wildfire.
Do you have a way – there are days when you eat barbecue like at six different places, right?
Yeah. Barbecue is best – if you're going to be out there critiquing it, it's best enjoyed in bunches. Mm-hmm. There's just so much more that you can learn going back to back to back to places. What you really liked about one place or maybe didn't like about another becomes that all that much more obvious when you're able to immediately compare it to something else. And, you know, as much mental notes and as many photos as I take, the audio notes that I take about each place – It's really hard to remember those distinct differences when you're separated by a night of sleep. So the more you can get into one day, the better.
Do you have like a palate cleanse? What are you just downing a Shiner between each place? Or what do you do?
Well, these are road trips. So downing a Shiner between each place would be a little dangerous. But and like I said, you know, a lot of the rural barbecue places out there just don't serve beer. So you're more likely to find some iced tea, a Coke, Dr. Pepper, Big Red, one of my favorites. So yeah, there's the palate cleanser is essentially the maybe the saltines in between, it's just best enjoyed in bunches.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Betsy in Dallas. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Daniel, it's Betsy. I've got a question about how your architectural training and background and experience might have prepared you for this new career of yours.
Well, one of the things I didn't learn in architecture school was that becoming an architect would be almost entirely writing. There's a little bit of drawing and sketching that goes in there, but emails is what took up most of my day. So I ended up writing a lot more than I ever thought, and a lot of that had to be persuasive writing as well. So then when it came to writing blog posts, it was something that I was already pretty confident doing.
So now that you're like a food critic, do you worry that you'll go back to a place that you said was good but not the best in Texas and that they'll sort of give you the gimlet eye?
Not really. I mean, there are only a few places out there that I've been kind of had a strong voice about how bad they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think most every place out there has potential. Maybe it's unrealized potential, or maybe that's as good as they can do. But I don't know. I haven't ever gotten really the old evil eye. If I was going to get it anywhere, it would have been at Salt Lick Barbecue in Driftwood. I'd done a review there. Then they came to the Texas Monthly Barbecue Festival. And beforehand, there was an interview with each of the pitmasters who was going to be at the festival. And one of the questions that was asked was, have you ever used or do you use gas or electric in any of your smoking techniques? And Scott Roberts, the owner there, his answer was no. I called him out on it, went to visit his place, saw the big gas smokers there, and basically called him a liar. He was very nice, very cordial, invited me back, said, you know what, I'll give you the full tour. I've got nothing to hide. I went back, had a better than average meal there, and got the full tour.
Daniel Vaughn is with us. He's the barbecue editor for Texas Monthly and author of The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. Call us at 800-933-5372. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering summer courses for adults in literature and languages, cultural history, and arts and design at the Dallas, Plano, and Taos, New Mexico campuses. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Daniel Vaughn. He's the barbecue editor for Texas Monthly Magazine and author of the new book, The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. Daniel will sign copies of his book at a barbecue at the Four Corners Brewery in West Dallas on Saturday. You can find more information on the Think page of KERA.org. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Randy calling from Lubbock. Hi, Randy.
Hi, how are you folks today? And thank you for having the program.
Oh, welcome.
Hey, my question for Daniel is related to Aaron Franklin. And I have watched every one of his videos on YouTube that I can find. And he seems to be sort of a scientist in a way. But I want to ask Daniel, what is his take on Aaron Franklin's success? I mean, I don't understand how he is so much better than everybody else yet. I believe that he is. So what do you think did it?
Thanks for your call.
Well, I think he got into it at an early enough age. He didn't have these outside influences of the way that you should do things, maybe from his dad or grandfather. And, you know, he took a passion and turned it into a business rather than kind of begrudgingly taking over a family business. You know, he his rise has been meteoric and pretty incredible. But I agree with you. The difference between his brisket and most brisket that you find in Texas is so completely different. And I think that, you know, when you talk to him about how he cooks brisket, and like you said, you watch those videos, yeah, there is a tremendous amount of science that goes into it. You know, there's this idea that you've just got to learn it through trial and error. And certainly trial and error is an important part of the process. And Aaron Franklin, and I think any pitmaster out there would certainly tell you that. But you don't always have to start clear at the bottom. You know, you can certainly help out your knowledge and help out the smoking process just by doing a little scientific research into how meat reacts with smoke, how meat reacts to fire, and how to control a fire. I mean, the thing about cooking a brisket and cooking any barbecue really that differs so much from other types of cooking is there's really nothing active that you're doing with the meat itself. Once you've trimmed and seasoned and put that meat on to smoke, you know, really it's best if you just leave it there and never touch it. So the whole process really is about tending a fire, about controlling the temperature in the smoker, about controlling the amount of smoke that's coming out. And so really a pitmaster ends up being a fire maker. So if you don't do some research and understand really how fire reacts, how different types of wood, whether it's seasoned, unseasoned, just different species of woods react to a fire, then you're really doing yourself a disservice.
Is there something about volume that makes it easier to get a great plate of barbecue at a restaurant or a stand somewhere than it is, no matter how hard people try to do it in the backyard with one of those little smoker things that you can buy that look like R2-D2?
Well, think about it this way. There's a little bit of a sweet spot there. If you're a very small operation and maybe you're putting on 5 briskets a day, well, the decision about whether to serve that 5th brisket that maybe didn't turn out so great, that's a pretty easy decision. You're going to serve it because that's all you've got.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're cooking 50 briskets a day and you've got maybe 1 or 2 briskets that didn't turn out so great, the decision to either turn that into chopped beef or just do away with that brisket altogether is also a little easier. You don't want to have, you know, 10 customers coming in and eating off that brisket and judging your barbecue by the bad one.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can go a whole nother level and, you know, be cooking so much meat that there's just not enough people or just not enough attention that can be paid to the meat. And so, therefore, the product that comes out just isn't going to be as good.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Email address is think@kera.org. We have an email here from Shane who says, I've been seeing more shoulder clod on menus lately, which I will – this is an interjection. I did not know that was a thing until I read your book. Shane says, I've had it a couple times recently at social gatherings. I didn't care for it, but have heard people rave about it. Can you talk about shoulder clod? Is it a better cut, harder to barbecue, et cetera?
Well, I don't think it's any harder to barbecue. It's actually, I think, a little bit easier to barbecue than a brisket, just because it has a little bit more intermuscular fat in there. It comes from the shoulder, really, just like a pork shoulder that you would smoke. It's just quite a bit bigger, obviously, because it's beef. So you're talking anywhere from maybe 11 or 12 to even up to 20 pounds for a single shoulder clod. One of the reasons I think people might not like it as well is if you're expecting the flavor of brisket, it's really a tighter muscle fiber. It also it's a much thicker cut of meat. So as far as the crust to meat ratio, you have a lot less crust, so maybe a lot less smoke flavor, a little bit harder for that salty rub to penetrate into the meat. So yeah, it's one of those that, like I said, that back in the meat markets, it was really the front of the cow that didn't get sold as easily in the meat counter. So shoulder clod was one of those that you're going to find in the old style places like Smitty's and Kreitz and Lockhart. And then here in Dallas, down at Lockhart Smokehouse, really taking on that same tradition and doing the shoulder clod.
800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Heather in Frisco. Hi, Heather.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, my question is this. I've been reading that barbecue competitions have stopped looking at smoke rings as a judge of good barbecue. Can you talk about kind of the controversy and what your opinion is on that?
Well, the reason that they've gone away from using that as a visual cue is that they can be artificially done. So you can use products like TenderQuick, or even just allowing the meat to sit overnight salted can really help you get a nice looking smoke ring. So the reason they've gone away from that is because very intelligent pit masters out there in competition were just using kind of fake ways to get a good smoke ring. But, you know, if you're looking at a commercial barbecue joint, I think there's very few guys out there who are like, wow, I know people are going to immediately judge my stuff based on a smoke ring. You know, so much of the competition world is about the visual. And whether they – I've judged competitions before. Whether they tell you not to look at the smoke ring or not, the fact is that a piece of meat with a nice smoke ring around it is a lot prettier than a gray piece of meat. So it's going to look more appetizing whether the rule book tells you to ignore it or not.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have an email here from Megan in Carrollton who says, I can't find barbecue beef ribs anywhere in Dallas, and I don't eat pork. Any suggestions for beef ribs?
Yeah, there are several places doing beef ribs these days. One of my favorites is at Smoke. Tim Byers does an incredible beef rib there. I think it's only on the dinner menu. It's a beef short rib, though, so it's not a beef back rib. Beef back rib comes off the ribeye portion. Because it comes off the ribeye portion, there's no meat that's ever left on the bone because they could either sell it for beef rib prices or ribeye prices. So mm-hmm. they obviously choose the ribeye. So they're cut really clean to the bone, have a lot of kind of stringy meat in between. You can get that at places like Risky's over in Fort Worth serves those beef ribs. But the short rib is really what I prefer. Again, you could go to Smoke, Lockhart Smokehouse, also on, I believe their Wednesday special is a beef rib. They do a great beef short rib. And Pecan Lodge has it on the menu every day that they're open. I think they're open for lunch Thursday through Sunday, and they have a good beef short rib. So those are some good options for you.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go now to Kay in Waxahachie. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I was just wanting to know, recently I had to go on kind of a road trip and chose to go around Austin, took the bypass, ended up going through Lockhart, and that is where I discovered Smitty's. And Lord knows, I think I discovered the best barbecue ever in that place. And when I came back, I decided to stop and pick some up, which leads to my question. I wanted to share that barbecue with my family up here, and it was good when it got here. But, of course, in the couple, 2 or 3 hours it took me to get home, that it kind of lost a little bit of flavor from sitting in whatever I had available to part it at home in. I'm wondering, I assume that you've had to bring some barbecue home at some point. Do you have any good suggestions for getting barbecue to travel some distance?
That's a great question.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a couple of things that you should do and a few things you should not do. One, if you're planning to travel with it, the worst thing you can do to a brisket is slice it. As soon as you slice it, it needs to be eaten right away. It loses moisture almost immediately. You know, if you even spend 10 minutes getting back to your table, it might already be dry. So make sure to get – if you want to bring brisket back especially, get it in a chunk that you're going to slice at home. Same thing with ribs. If you're going to get ribs, ask them not to slice the ribs individually. Leave it a full rack. That's going to help you out a lot more. And then as far as holding the meat, well, the best thing to do is to bring a cooler. And not a cooler that's filled with ice, obviously, but just a nice, small, insulated cooler that's about large enough to hold just the meat that you're going to bring. Wrap it up in something. If you wrap it up in foil, you're going to get some condensation that might screw with the crust a little bit. But if you wrap it up in butcher paper, then that's the best option. And if you're at a place like Smitty's or Kreitz or any of those places in Lockhart, they're certainly going to have an abundance of butcher paper for you to use. So if you just ask them to leave the meat in chunks, wrap it in butcher paper, and put that into a cooler, chances are if you're on a 3-hour drive, it's still going to be warm when you get there.
800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Michael in Dallas. Hey, Michael.
Hello. Just wondering about Cooper's in Llano. I discovered that a few years ago and just fell so in love with it. And one time I even did a comparison of Salt Lick and Cooper's with some friends down in the Hill Country. and Cooper's came out the huge winner. But I haven't seen you rate it very highly, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about it. Thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't have Cooper's rated low. I think I rated a 4-star on my site, which says it's worth an hour drive to get out there. And, you know, there's few things that are worth driving an hour back and forth for. I like Cooper's, but the problem I have with Cooper's is that they're best right when they open. The way they hold their meat, they hold it in a large pit out front, their show pit. They hold all the meat in there. It's got a continual heat. Nothing is wrapped up. It's all just kind of out there. And the way that they do that, it allows the meat to dry out pretty easily. So the best meals I've had there are at 11 or 11:30, and then I've had really bad meals there at 3 or 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. So Cooper's is great, in my opinion, with the caveat of getting there right when they open.
What do you like to eat with your barbecue when you're not saving room to eat three more barbecue meals the same day?
Ah, well, a good fried okra, and not just that frozen crap that's out there, mm-hmm. That they dump in the deep fryer, but, you know, hand-breaded okra is one of the great ones.
Where do they do a good fried okra? Can you think of a place offhand?
Actually, FM Smokehouse here in Irving does a really good fried okra. The Slow Bone is a new place down off of Irving Boulevard. They do a really good fried okra as well. Some really good pinto beans, mm-hmm. and I'm not talking just ranch beans out of the can, but pinto beans that have been cooked down, maybe have some jalapenos in there, a little salt. That goes a long way. So eating some good beans, some good fried okra, and, you know, really just some white bread and dill pickles.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
And barbecue desserts, you have a little section in the book about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got a few favorites. I mean, banana pudding is one of my favorites, like, anywhere.
But not banana-flavored pudding, we should say.
Not banana-flavored pudding. Oh, my. The worst thing that can happen is you get in the car and you've gotten your to-go order and you ordered the banana pudding and you open up that container and it's bright yellow. You don't even need to take a bite of it. You just just put the lid back on and throw it away because it's going to be terrible. That banana flavoring tastes nothing like bananas. But at places like Pecan Lodge here in Dallas, they do an incredible banana pudding. Peach cobbler is obviously a favorite. It's a favorite across Texas. But one of the things that I haven't really found anywhere else is pecan cobbler. And that caller just mentioned Cooper's in Llano. They do an incredible pecan cobbler. At Bob's in Henderson, they do both a peach cobbler and a homemade pecan cobbler. And I can't choose between the two, so just order both.
Do you like your iced tea sweet or unsweet when you're tasting barbecue?
I do half and half.
Really?
I do half and half wherever I go. Sweet tea is too sweet for me. I like an unsweet tea every now and again, but half and half tea is usually where I go.
Daniel Vaughn was recently hired on as the first ever barbecue editor for Texas Monthly Magazine. He will be appearing to sign his book at a barbecue at the Four Corners Brewery in West Dallas on Saturday. You can find information about that on the Think page. And his new book that we just mentioned is called The Prophets of Smoked Meat, A Journey Through Texas Barbecue. Daniel, it's been a delicious privilege to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can learn more about the show, find out about upcoming programs, and download the podcast free at kera.org/think. And we always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions. Email those to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.